Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, June 8th, 2021. Coming up this hour.
Reaction pours into the landmark approval of Biogen's Alzheimer's drug. We hear from the CEO.
Bipartisan talks on infrastructure spending appear to have stalled.
The U.S. recovers nearly all the ransom paid in last month's Colonial Pipeline hack.
More COVID restrictions could be lifted in a matter of days in New York, and one mayoral candidate is low in the polls but is getting plenty of Wall Street support. I'm Amy Morris. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Blowout win for the Nets. They're up 2-0 on Milwaukee. The Islanders won Game 5 in Boston for a 3-2 series lead.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by SEI. Since its founding 50 years ago, SEI has provided investment managers and asset owners with robust infrastructure platforms and flexible outsourcing solutions. Go to seic.com/IMS.
And futures are mixed this morning. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, little change. Dow futures down 52, and NASDAQ futures are up 24. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 1.55%, and the yield on the 2-year, 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.75% or 50 cents at $68.73 a barrel, and COMEX gold is down 0.25% at $18.94.60. Announced. Nathan.
McCarran Biogen is still the talk of the town this morning. The company's new Alzheimer's therapy is being called a game changer after winning approval from U.S. regulators. That sent shares up almost 40%. CEO Michelle Vounatsa says the decision could dramatically change treatment for the debilitating disease.
Today you have three compounds with similar activity, and we are the first one in the market. In a few years, there will be others, and we invite them because the market is so large.
Biogen CEO Michelle Vounatsa says the company has already produced millions of vials of the drug, and it could hit the market within 2 weeks. We'll have more from that interview coming up in about 15 minutes.
We now turn to the latest on Capitol Hill, where bipartisan talks on infrastructure appear to have stalled. Let's get the latest live with Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. President Biden rejected the latest GOP proposal last week, and Shelley Moore Capito, who's leading the discussions for Republicans, said she's bringing no new counteroffer to a conversation with Biden. That's scheduled for today. So a bipartisan group of senators say they're ready to step in with an alternative. Republican Senator Mitt Romney says he and five others will present their own proposal to a wider bipartisan group of 20 lawmakers. And the White House is open to discussions with the group. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. We have new details emerging on last month's cyber attack on Colonial Pipeline. The U.S. says it's recovered almost all the ransom paid to the perpetrators of the hack. FBI Deputy Director Paul Abate says the seizure amounts to $2.3 million.
Today, the FBI successfully seized criminal proceeds from a Bitcoin wallet that dark side ransomware actors used to collect a cyber ransom payment from a victim.
FBI Deputy Director Paul Abate says the agency was able to find the Bitcoin by uncovering digital addresses the hackers used to transfer funds.
New developments this morning on the fight against the pandemic. The coronavirus variant driving India's devastating second wave appears to be the most infectious yet. Hearing impairment, severe gastric issues, and blood clots leading to gangrene have been linked by doctors in India to the so-called Delta variant. They're serious symptoms not typically seen in COVID patients. And in England and Scotland, early evidence suggests the strain carries a high risk of hospitalization.
Tensions between Washington and Beijing could be heating up over the virus. A U.S. report is said to conclude COVID-19 could have leaked from a lab in Wuhan, China. According to the Wall Street Journal, the study was prepared last year by the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California. It says the Wuhan leak theory should be investigated.
Meantime, in China, legislators are going ahead with a law aimed at countering U.S. sanctions. A National People's Congress committee has filed a second draft of the legislation. Chinese media say the measure would provide legal backing for countering, quote, discriminatory measures by a foreign country.
At the same time, legislation is coming to Capitol Hill designed to strengthen U.S. competitiveness against China. The bill authorizes more than $200 billion in spending and could be passed in the Senate as soon as today. Now, the measure's course in the House isn't clear.
Back here in the U.S., we continue to see progress in the battle against the pandemic. The country saw just 15,000 new infections yesterday, and now Wall Street is getting more optimistic about workers coming back to the office. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has more.
Employers in the financial services industry expect 61% of staff to be back by the end of September. That's up from 50% in March, according to a survey by the Partnership for New York City. About 14% of finance workers have already made their way back, the second highest occupancy among industries surveyed, but still well below real estate at 70%. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. Turning to corporate news now, it looks like Amazon could be subject to that new global minimum tax rate. Policymakers are constructing the plan to make sure the company is included, even though it has a profit margin below the 10% threshold. Sources say one scenario involves targeting individual operations like Amazon's more profitable cloud computing unit rather than the entire company.
Another big tech company is also in the spotlight. Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference resumes today after day one brought us everything from new hardware to a new operating system. But the real highlight may be a big overhaul to FaceTime. Bloomberg's Mark Gurman has more.
Apple gave FaceTime the biggest update it's ever given the service since it launched in 2010. This is going straight after Zoom. They're adding scheduled FaceTime calls. They're adding improved video and audio quality, and a new feature that allows you to start a FaceTime call and then send a link to it to another user, just like you do with Zoom. And interestingly, it will work on the web on both Android and Windows.
Bloomberg's Mark Gurman says there's also a new SharePlay feature for users on FaceTime to watch video, listen to music, access apps together, and share screens. And S&P futures are now up about 4 points. Dow futures down 24. NASDAQ futures up 37. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 1.56%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.15%. The euro 1.2176 against the dollar. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
And at 5:07 on Wall Street, we bring in Amy Morris for a look at what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo focusing now on getting 70% of adults at least one shot of a COVID-19 vaccine.
And then we can lift the capacity restrictions, social distancing, hygiene protocols, the health screenings, the potential tracing.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state might be able to hit that goal in just a matter of days. About 68.7% of New York adults have received at least one dose of the vaccine already. Liberal groups are calling on New York lawmakers to use the last days of this legislative session to pass bills related to the criminal justice system, despite concerns over rising gun violence that could make reform more politically risky. Many of those bills remained in committee with their prospects for passage this year uncertain. Former Citigroup executive Ray McGuire is low in the polls, but financial industry donors are continuing to pump money into his mayoral campaign. McGuire talked about his comeback plan for New York City with Bloomberg's David Westin on Balance of Power.
We're a tale of two cities right now. We're a tale of a fractured city. So unless we have someone in whom the city can believe, in whom they can trust, who's got a track record of pulling people together, that horse is going to go in the wrong direction.
Former Citigroup executive Ray McGuire has received more than five times as much money from Wall Street as other mayoral candidates. The Democratic primary is set for June 22nd. A New York Supreme Court judge has sided with State Attorney General Letitia James, requiring a local board of elections to place early voting locations in areas easily accessible from majority black neighborhoods ahead of the municipal primary this month. New York requires boards of elections and their commissioners to ensure that early voting poll sites provide adequate and equitable access to all voters. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says he'll close the state's only women's prison after a night of violence by staff back in January left some inmates injured and renewed scrutiny of the facility's troubled past. At least 10 employees of the Edna Mann Correctional Facility for Women are facing criminal charges. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, Amy. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stashower.
Good morning, Nathan. Two New York teams with round two playoff victories. It was ridiculously easy for the Nets in Brooklyn. They led Milwaukee by 26 in the first half. At one point, led by 49. They won by 41, 125 to 86. Most lopsided playoff win in Nets history, and they lead the Bucks two games to none. Kevin Durant scored 32 points, did not play at all in the fourth quarter. Kyrie Irving added 22. The Nets are not known for their defense, yet they held the Bucks to 34 points under their season scoring average. Kyrie was proud of that.
The level of effort, our attention to detail, our communication, we're just really being there for one another on the defensive end. So that makes a huge difference when guys are playing against us, and instead of seeing one body, they're seeing two or three, and we're just trying to make our opponent think.
The Nets did all this without James Harden, not known when or if he'll play in the series that now moves to Milwaukee. Phoenix won game one from Denver. Tom Thibodeau rewarded for the Knicks' vast improvement. He was named NBA Coach of the Year. The Islanders in Boston got outshot 44-19, but they scored three times on the power play. They beat the Bruins 5-4, and they now lead the series for the first time, 3-2. Five different Islander goal scorers, 40 saves for Semyon Varlamov. Montreal won in overtime for a four-game sweep of Winnipeg. Jim Fossil, who coached the Giants for seven seasons, including 2000 when they reached the Super Bowl, has died at 71. Fossil, who lived in Las Vegas, suffered a heart attack. Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic in the French Open quarterfinals, so is 17-year-old Coco Gauff. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
And John, Nick Saban's going to roll tide for pretty much the rest of this decade. Alabama has awarded a three-year contract extension to its football coach. It includes nearly $8.5 million in base salary and a talent fee for the current contract year, with annual raises of unspecified amounts. Nick Saban has led the Tide to six national championships since taking over in 2007. The contract extension runs through the 2028 season. Futures mixed on this Tuesday morning. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, scattered afternoon showers and thunder showers today, going up to near 90 today and tomorrow, in fact. By Thursday, we'll be in the upper 70s with afternoon thunder showers possible.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Treasuries rising with the U.S. dollar as investors debate the impact of resurgent inflation on monetary policy. Well, S&P futures are starting to strengthen a bit. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up about 5 points right now. Dow futures are lower, down 9, and NASDAQ futures are up 34. DAX in Germany is up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 1.56%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.5% or 34 cents at $68.89 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.2% or $3.90 at $18.94.90 an ounce. The euro 1.2172 against the dollar. British pound 1.4145. The yen's at 109.51. Checking Bitcoin at $32,945. And today we're watching for a report on small business optimism out at 6 o'clock Wall Street time. The trade balance is out at 8:30. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Amy Morris with more on what's going on around the world. Amy, good morning.
Karen, good morning. The Biden administration is supporting former President Trump's position that he can't be sued for defamation because he made remarks while he was president. The rule allows the former president to dodge a defamation lawsuit by columnist E. Jean Carroll, who claims he raped her 2 decades ago. A top executive from Fisher-Price admitted to lawmakers that at least 90 infant deaths have been linked to the company's recalled rock-and-play inclined sleeper. House committee members say Fisher-Price knowingly put profit over safety. The Justice Department will require officers to wear body cameras when making planned arrests or serving search warrants. That's a significant policy shift. And in sports, the Islanders beat the Bruins to take a 3-2 series lead. The Nets beat the Bucks to go up 2-0 in their NBA playoffs series. Series, and in baseball, the Red Sox beat the Marlins. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, Amy. It's 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and reaction continues to pour into news that Biogen's controversial Alzheimer's drug has won U.S. regulatory approval. It is a landmark decision that could dramatically change treatment for the debilitating brain condition. But there are also questions about this drug. For more on the antibody therapy, let's hear from the CEO of Biogen. Michel Vounatsis sat down for an interview with Bloomberg's Romain Bostic, Taylor Riggs, and Caroline Hyde late yesterday. Let's listen into that conversation now.
First of all, congratulations to the company. And of course, this is an encouraging sign for all of those people suffering from Alzheimer's and, of course, their families who have to suffer alongside them, Michel. But there's also a lot of work here for you to prove that not only is this treatment effective, but it's also safe.
So nowadays you have, you know, three treatments that have shown that binding characteristic to the amyloid plaque that is toxic around the brain and accumulates over decades. The way a plaque is toxic in the heart, we are able to penetrate the brain and gradually remove the plaque. And this is critical. And now there is not only aducanumab, there are three compounds. The next compound in the line is the one we have in collaboration with Eisai, that is BAN2401, that is now in phase three, for which the phase three readout will be in a bit more than a year from now. So the FDA has done a thorough analysis of the entire data set. We had more than 2 million pages of scientific data being shared with the U.S. regulator, having the efficacy and the safety profile thoroughly evaluated.
I understand that, Michelle. But there's also pushback by some scientists who question whether amyloids themselves are actually sort of the key to solving Alzheimer's. So you have a drug that may be successful in targeting those amyloids. How confident are you that that really is the problem that needs to be solved?
Well, it removes gradually the underlying cause, the pathophysiology of the disease. Down the road, there might be additional hypotheses. But this will take many years before we can see the scientific proof. And as I was just saying, today you have three compounds with similar activity, and we are the first one in the market. In a few years, there will be others, and we invite them because the market is so large.
Talk to us about the pricing strategy. Of course, you're saying that it's about $56,000 a year for the cost. For an average consumer, including the multiple year visits for a transfusion, required MRI scans, what would it cost the average consumer?
I think, you know, to get things in perspective, we need to consider that the starting point is a $600 billion that society is spending in direct and indirect cost on this disease in the U.S. only, and that the epidemiology is planned to triple by 2050. So yes, there will be some investment finally on treatment, on diagnosis, and I wish that we have diagnosis reimbursed soon. And technology is progressing very fast in that space, and I hope that soon we'll have also a blood diagnostics that will help, that will ease the broader population to have a biomarker in addition to the clinical diagnostic. This is important.
Michel, of course, we are a global network. You are a global man. You've led businesses over in Europe, in China. I'm sitting here just flying back from the UK a week or so ago. I think of this FDA approval and the knock-on effects globally. 6 million afflicted by Alzheimer's here in the United States, but this is a global issue for many a family. Do you think that we'll see other decision makers, other regulators look at the decision made in the U.S. and fast track too?
I believe so. I believe so because the U.S. FDA is so important, and they are the one that I work the most on the global data set since more than 2 years. But we are also with a similar level of scientific engagement and respect working with the Europeans, with EMA, with Japan, with Australia, with Canada, with Switzerland, with Brazil, where the product is filed and currently under review. and our aim is to make the product available everywhere.
And that's Biogen CEO Michel Vounatsos speaking with Bloomberg's Romain Bostic, Taylor Riggs, and Caroline Hyde. Following word, Biogen's controversial Alzheimer's drug won approval from U.S. regulators. The news sent the shares of Biogen up nearly 40%. Taking a look at U.S. futures this morning, they're mixed, with S&P futures up 5 points, Dow futures down 6, NASDAQ futures higher by 41 points. The 10-year Treasury is up 2/32, the yield 1.56%, yield on the 2-year 0.15%. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. Chance for scattered afternoon showers and thunderstorms today, going up near 90 degrees. We'll be near 90 again tomorrow. Upper 70s Thursday with a chance for afternoon thunder showers. Currently 76.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Biogen, still the talk of the town. Its new Alzheimer's therapy is being called a game changer after winning approval from U.S. regulators. That sent shares up almost 40%. CEO Michel Vounatsos says the battle against Alzheimer's is a costly one.
The starting point is a $600 billion that society is spending in direct and indirect cost on this disease in the U.S. only, and that the epidemiology is planned to triple by 2050.
Biogen CEO Michel Vounatsos says the company has already produced millions of vials of the drug, and it could hit the market within 2 weeks.
In other news this morning, bipartisan talks on infrastructure appear to have stalled. Let's get the latest live with Bloomberg's Renita Young. Renita?
Nathan, President Biden rejected the GOP's latest proposal last week, and Republican Shelley Moore Capito said she's bringing no new counteroffer to a conversation with Biden that's scheduled for today. So a bipartisan group of senators say they're ready to step in with an alternative. Republican Senator Mitt Romney says he and five others will present their own proposal to a wider bipartisan group of 20 lawmakers. And the White House is open to discussions with the group. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Renita, thank you. U.S.-China relations are also in focus. Legislation is coming on Capitol Hill designed to strengthen U.S. competitiveness against China. The bill, which authorizes more than $200 billion in spending, could be passed in the Senate as soon as today.
There are new details emerging on last month's cyber attack on Colonial Pipeline. The U.S. says it's recovered almost all the ransom paid to the perpetrators of the hack. The FBI was able to find the funds in Bitcoin by uncovering digital addresses the hackers used to transfer money.
And on the corporate front, it looks like Amazon could be subject to that new global minimum tax rate. Policymakers are constructing the plan to make sure the company is included, even though it has a profit margin below the 10% threshold. Sources say one scenario involves targeting individual operations like Amazon's more profitable cloud computing unit rather than the entire company. S&P futures are up about 5 points this morning. Dow futures down 16. NASDAQ futures up 39. 10-year Treasury up 3/32. Yield 1.55%. The yield on the 2-year 0.15%. And NYMEX crude oil is down 0.4%. And straight ahead, we have your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
Five:33 on Wall Street. Amy Morris is here for a look at what's going on in New York and around the world. Amy?
Thank you, Nathan. Governor Andrew Cuomo says New York's COVID-19-based restrictions will be effectively ended once the state is 70% vaccinated.
When we hit 70%, then I feel comfortable saying to the people of this state, we can relax virtually all restrictions.
Governor Andrew Cuomo's announcement follows a number of steps taken by the state recently that are aimed at loosening those restrictions, including for things like masks and capacity limits. Cuomo says officials are now focusing on zip codes where vaccine rates are low as well as getting younger people vaccinated. Wall Street is more optimistic about persuading workers to come back to the office. Employers in the financial services industry expect 61% of staff to be back by the end of September. That is according to a survey by the Partnership for New York City. Bank of America is encouraging top managers to return to the office. Goldman Sachs has told workers to plan to start coming in next week. New York City holds its primaries for mayor in just over 2 weeks. Former Citigroup executive Ray McGuire is low in the polls, but getting plenty of support from Wall Street. McGuire tells Bloomberg's David Westin on Balance of Power his plan for New York City includes the most, in his words, inclusive comeback plan in the history of the city.
I say inclusive by design. It's to create 500,000 jobs. Go big, infrastructure. Go small, small businesses. Go forward. Technology investing in the future.
Former Citigroup executive Ray McGuire's campaign has received $1.4 million from employees of big banks, private equity firms, and hedge funds. The Democratic primary is June 22nd. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio says the curfew in Washington Square Park will stay, this despite clashes with police over the weekend resulting in 24 arrests. And New York Governor Cuomo is adding a virtual fundraiser in July for small dollar donors. The summer events provide the latest sign that Cuomo could be running for a fourth term. His campaign sent an email to supporters inviting them to a grassroots reception with Governor Cuomo on July 6th, held virtually over Zoom. The cost, $25. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Amy. At 5:35 on Wall Street, we bring in John Stashower for the Bloomberg Sports Update.
Thanks, Nathan. You have to wonder, what would the Nets' margin of victory have been last night had James Harden played? An indication of just how talented the Nets are. They were without the injured Harden, who's been an NBA MVP, three-time scoring champ, and they still beat Milwaukee and Brooklyn by 41. Most lopsided Nets playoff win ever, 125-86. Kevin Durant scored 32 points in 33 minutes. The Nets shot 52%, made 21 of 42 three-pointers, their coach is Steve Nash.
I think continuity and confidence is growing, so I think we're more aware of what we're trying to accomplish in more scenarios, and that's helping us, you know, feel free to really go for it, play hard, compete, be willing and okay to make mistakes, but try to do the right things at both ends.
Series 2-0 Nets heading to Milwaukee. Phoenix took the series opener with Denver. The Suns coach Monty Williams actually got two more first-place votes, but it was the Knicks, Tom Thibodeau, who was named NBA Coach of the Year. He also won it a decade ago with Chicago. Huge win for the Islanders, 5-4 in Boston. They go up 3-2. They can reach the conference finals for the second straight year with a win tomorrow at the Coliseum. The Isles had three power play goals. Bruins coach Bruce Cassidy ripped the officiating. He said they treat the Islanders like they're the New York Saints. Montreal won in overtime for a sweep of Winnipeg. Jim Fossil has passed away at 71. Fossil coached the Giants for 7 seasons, led them to the Super Bowl in 2000, suffered a heart attack at his home in Las Vegas. Rafael Nadal's fourth-round win at the French Open raises his career match record in Paris to 100 wins, 2 losses. Novak Djokovic dropped the first 2 sets but lost only 1 game after that. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street, and this is Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's focus on small business now and the findings from a survey of owners who took part in the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Training Program. 75% of respondents think future conditions will improve, but there are also warning signs. For more on the findings, Bloomberg's John Tucker speaks with Asahi Pompei, the president of the Goldman Sachs Foundation.
Never were small businesses more stressed than during the pandemic. What are the lessons learned?
It has been the toughest year ever for small businesses, and they're telling me they've learned a bunch of things. One is the importance of their financials, having those records, having them on hand, not just when it's tax season, but all the time, is one of the key lessons learned.
Now, Goldman Sachs and you do conduct surveys of the small businesses that you've trained through the 10,000 Small Business Program. What have they said about the pandemic and some of the things they're still facing in terms of the problems and the challenges?
You know, here's the good side. They're optimistic about the economy. Over 75% of our respondents believe things are going to be better in 2021 than they were during the pandemic, but they're ringing the alarm bells, John, in a number of areas. One is they say it's tough finding employees, and in particular, it's hard finding employees with the right skills, these non-technical skills, sales, marketing, customer service. They say that's where their key and critical needs are.
Has the situation with access to capital improved much for small businesses?
You know, certainly PPP was extraordinarily helpful, but, you know, here's what they're saying to us. They think that the biggest roadblock to their recovery is going to be access to capital. They said nearly 35% of our small business owners report wanting to take on more debt. But get this, John, 50% of them report that they're not confident that they're going to be approved, right? And so there's some real concern with the optimism is married to concern in the small business community.
And that is Asahi Pompei, president of the Goldman Sachs Foundation, speaking with Bloomberg's John Tucker on the challenges facing small business as we begin to emerge from the pandemic. And in the interest of transparency, we should note that Michael Bloomberg, the founder and majority owner of Bloomberg LP, parent company of Bloomberg Radio, is a co-chair of the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses Advisory Council. It is 5:39 on Wall Street, and on the economic front today, Wall Street gears up for three economic indicators: job openings, the trade deficit, and small business optimism. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice reports.
A year ago, we were struggling with record unemployment. Now, as the pandemic wanes, businesses can't find workers. Record job openings, 8 million nationwide as of March. Bloomberg Economics says demand is nudging wages higher. Also on deck today, April's trade deficit in goods and services. It's forecast to moderate from the prior month's record. And small business confidence data, it's been on the rise. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And Vinny, it's being called a huge loss at Tesla. The electric car maker has parted ways with Jerome Guillen, a 10-year veteran who was one of four top executives running the company alongside CEO Elon Musk. Guillen was the brains behind the ramp-up of Model 3 production in 2018. No word on why he's leaving. Tesla has struggled with executive turnover for years. Futures are mixed on this Tuesday morning. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. Chance for scattered afternoon showers and thundershowers today and tomorrow. Both days near 90 degrees. We'll be in the upper 70s with more afternoon thundershowers possible. Currently 76 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Treasuries are rising with the U.S. dollar as investors debate the impact of resurgent inflation on monetary policy. S&P futures are higher. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 5 points. Dow futures lower, down 17. NASDAQ futures are up 44. The DAX in Germany is up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 1.56%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.5% or 31 cents at $68.92 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.25% or $4.20 at $18.94.60 an ounce. The euro 1.2173 against the dollar, British pound 1.4141, and the yen 109.54. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Amy Morris with more on what's going on around the world. Amy.
Karen, a Senate investigation of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, uncovering broad government, military, and law enforcement missteps before the riot, includes new details about the police officers who suffered chemical burns, brain injuries, and broken bones. It also recommends immediate changes to give Capitol Police more authority. The chief executive of the Colonial Pipeline is scheduled to testify before Congress this week to explain his company's response to the ransomware cyber attack. Vice President Kamala Harris is warning Central Americans do not come to the U.S. Harris says there are legal methods for migration, and if people come to the border illegally, they will be turned back. The Islanders beat the Bruins. The Nets beat the Bucks. The Red Sox beat the Marlins. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Amy. Thanks for coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're coming up on day two of Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference. But day one saw plenty of updates to the operating systems for Apple's most popular hardware. For the very latest, let's bring in Dan Ives, Managing Director of Equity Research at Wedbush Securities. Dan, good morning. What do you think of iOS 15?
Look, I thought this was really about privacy. I mean, it was really Apple doubling down on privacy. And this is something that we see as they continue to go head to head with Facebook on the other side of this sort of Game of Thrones battle. But you take a step back, they're laying in the groundwork here for the next stage of innovation in Cupertino. And I believe it really gave developers everything they were looking for from an iOS 15 perspective.
Of course, privacy has been sort of the mainstay of Apple's brand, hasn't it? How does the iOS really improve on what Apple has delivered in the past?
If you look at 14.5, this latest release, this is what really took them a step in that direction. And obviously it was ruffled the feathers of Facebook. Much more privacy controls, data security, any app tracking or app following. And what that really does, it goes against the whole advertising and ad tracking. And I think Apple's really put a foot down. And I think it just shows Cook and Cupertino are going to continue going this direction. And it's something I think developers want to see them ultimately go down. And remember, this is at a time that Apple is under massive scrutiny with the Epic court battle, as well as regulatory antitrust concerns on the App Store, both from the EU and Belgium. So it comes at a pivotal time as they continue to kind of flex the muscles on the privacy side.
I want to ask you a little bit more about the App Store in a minute, but first you mentioned that this is going after Facebook when it comes to the privacy side. When you think about FaceTime and the idea of people calling each other, being able to see each other eye to eye, it raises the question about Zoom video as well, doesn't it?
Well, that's why. I mean, what they're really going after here, they're integrating more of their services from Apple Music to streaming. You talk about what they're going after with Zoom. Everyone's seen what Zoom's done. And I think you look at not just Apple, but they're trying to also get some share when it comes to collaboration, which is going to be here to stay. And this is just them putting more of an iron fence around that install base, more and more monetization. And that's how ultimately they make $65 billion a year in services.
Do you think Apple's done enough to address the scrutiny surrounding the App Store, particularly after the Epic Games court battle at this event?
Look, I think ultimately they do win that case, but this is going to be a 12-round boxing match. It's not just going to end here. You'll see appeals, and then ultimately you'll see from the EU and the Beltway more and more folks in the App Store. And this continues to be, you know, I think a tight wire balancing act for Apple, just given what they've built on the App Store, the 30% fee. They're going to continue to defend that. But right now, from a big tech perspective, you're going to see that under scrutiny. And I think right now that's about a $15 to $20 overhang on the stock.
Of course, the attention at the WWDC yesterday was on the iOS. We didn't see much in the way of new hardware from Apple so far at this conference. Is that a surprise to you?
Yeah, I mean, normally this is a software event, but we saw some product announcements last year. It was a slight disappointment not to see the two new Mac Pros, the 14 and the 16-inch. I do think they didn't want to take away from iOS 15 and the privacy, and this was more for developers. Didn't want to ruffle any feathers there. I believe we'll get that probably in the next 3-4 weeks in a separate announcement. But no doubt, I mean, that was a slight disappointment not seeing the Mac Pros, where I think there was a view that they were going to release them yesterday.
Only about 30 seconds left here, Dan. What are you expecting for day two and for the rest of the week?
I think this has really proven to developers and, you know, ultimately software players why they could charge 30%, why they continue to focus on the iOS and the Apple ecosystem. Remember, they're competing and share from other large tech players. It's them just, I think, further showing the features that are in the future, which is laying the yellow brick road for growth on the hardware side. So we continue to be bullish on Apple here.
Appreciate it as always. Dan Ives, Managing Director of Equity Research at Wedbush Securities. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute? Resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The New York State Senate advanced a bill to overhaul the state's antitrust laws. The measure is intended to curb anti-competitive acquisitions by large technology companies. Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed a bill that prohibits businesses from requiring customers to produce a vaccine passport proving they've been inoculated against COVID-19. The owner of MoviePass settled charges filed by the Federal Trade Commission that the now-defunct movie subscription service misled customers.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, another legal news we're watching. A federal judge has overturned California's three-decade-old ban on assault weapons. Gun safety advocates are calling the language used by Judge Roger Benitez offensive. He compared an AR-15 rifle to a Swiss Army knife. For more on the decision, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to Second Amendment expert Adam Winkler, a professor at UCLA Law School.
The judge compared the AR-15 rifle to the Swiss Army knife. Good for both home and battle. What's behind this comparison?
Well, perhaps the most surprising thing about the opinion was the judge's equating of a military-style assault rifle to a Swiss Army knife. Of course, a military-style assault rifle is far more dangerous than a Swiss Army knife. But the point that the judge is making is that, like a Swiss Army knife, many people will have this kind of device, and it's perfectly lawful, and they don't do anything wrong with it. And indeed, he makes the point in the opinion that knives kill more people in California than assault rifles every year.
The way he wrote the decision, do you think it was designed to shock?
I don't know if it was designed to shock, but it's certainly designed to get the attention of the courts of appeals. And the judge was very careful to detail what was the basis of his ruling. What are the facts that he accepted? Who are the witnesses and experts that he found most persuasive? And what was the data that he thought was most influential? And that will, in part, influence the court of appeals when they hear this appeal in this case, because they'll be limited in some ways by the facts as the lower court found them.
Similar assault weapons bans, have they been upheld by other federal district courts or appellate courts?
Most courts have upheld those laws, finding that while these military-style weapons are in common use and thus probably protected by the Second Amendment, at least at first glance, the courts have generally said that the government has sufficiently strong reasons to limit access to these weapons because of their special dangers. Judge Benitez, however, did not buy into the argument that these firearms posed special dangers, and that's why he compared them to Swiss Army knives.
And that's Adam Winkler, a professor at UCLA Law School, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. Attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. And in the interest of transparency, we should note that Michael Bloomberg, the founder and majority owner of Bloomberg LP, the parent of Bloomberg Radio, is a donor to groups that support gun control, including Every Town for Gun Safety. S&P futures are up 4 points this morning. Dow futures down 21 and NASDAQ futures up 41. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 1.55%. Top stories straight ahead as Bloomberg Daybreak continues.